All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock, but more importantly, the man sitting next to me is that dude, Marcellus Wiley. Man, I've been waiting on you a long time. So glad to have you here.
Great to be here, brother.
So glad to have you here.
Great to be here, guys, man. Excited about the opportunity. Going to get after it, so you better watch out, big dog.
All right, this is a special treat. This is a preview. Marcellus will start full time in about a week.
One and done?
Just a little treat, just a little teaser. But also joining me today, Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, former NFL player and scout Bucky Brooks. All right, but let's start. Let's get to some news, starting with Colin Kaepernick, who may not have a job in the NFL, but just landed one selling shoes with Nike, featuring the activist quarterback in the company's Just Do It 30th anniversary campaign. Kaepernick has been on Nike's roster for several years, but this campaign reportedly marks the start of a massive deal worth millions of dollars. There's conflicting reports on this about how deep this partnership goes. I want to start here, Marcellus. For me, this undermines Colin Kaepernick as an activist. Hmm. I think that if you're a true revolutionary, if you're a true activist, Jim Brown has been saying this about Kaepernick from the get-go, hey, either be a football player or be an activist. And this, to me, is a brand play. This is about business. And anytime I see business, and particularly major corporations like a Nike, stick their head into activism, it's really not about business. It's about marketing. It's about PR. And for me, for Kaepernick as an activist, I've never been that big on it. But this, to me, exposes what I think what it's always been about, branding. Kaepernick is a brand. He's been trying to build a brand through this activism. When he couldn't build one as a great quarterback, he moved to this. Taking this Nike money and becoming the part of selling shoes as part of your activism doesn't play well for me.
See, listening to you and that take, it's alarming the hypocrisy that comes out when you study what activism is, when you look at someone who's trying to be a revolutionary. This is old news. This is something that has happened before. If you want to go all the way back to Martin Luther King and his association with Coca-Cola after the Nobel Peace Prize winning and his dinner that was supported by Coca-Cola, the hypocrisy comes from that we're looking at messaging for profit as a negative instead of the positive that it is, because this all started off of activism, which was articulated, misconstrued, but needed to turn into action. Now you have major corporations like a Nike, Coca-Cola of the past, who are now in bed with activists, who can now push this to the two levels that we need for anything to change in our society, which is policy and profits. That's just the way the game has changed, and this is the way the game is going to change. This is the evolution of that revolution.
I get the Martin Luther King deal. Soledad O'Brien hit me with it earlier in the day.
I just hit you with it, too.
I mean,
you ain't got to go all off set with it. I'm here, bro. Let's get upstage me.
I'm just saying, people have hit me with it.
Yeah, okay.
Again, the Martin Luther King dinner was about it was not going to be integrated. It was they wanted a segregated dinner, and Coca-Cola stepped in and said, no, we won't sponsor it unless it is integrated, and they moved. This is completely different, particularly when you understand Nike's relationship with labor and basically slave labor in Asia. Nike is trying to market its way and promote its way out of, they're the true hypocrites. If you want to talk about oppression, go look at the Asian slave laborers who make Nike shoes, and Nike's been criticized for this forever. If you go look at the discrimination lawsuits that Nike's dealing with, the executives they just fired over discrimination against women and blacks, this is all a PR play, in my view, from Nike. Again, I don't blame Kaepernick. He needs some money. But I don't, anytime.
Everybody.
How different is this than America's relationship with labor and slave labor, using your words? I mean, look, we could go a lot of places with this, but one place we shouldn't go is that an alliance with a major corporation that's going to promote your proper messaging is a negative. I don't understand it.
I think it's a positive. I think this is part of what Nike has done in the last couple years. You think about the equality campaign they did with LeBron James and several other stars. Having Colin Kaepernick, to me, is smart business by them. The reason is the demographic that he's going to touch, 18 to 29, young people. I have a 15-year-old son who is heavy into the sneaker game. Colin Kaepernick is viewed as a revolutionary by that genre, that generation. So Nike is in bed with a guy who is popular amongst them. He's going to sell a lot of shoes. And for Colin Kaepernick, he gets a big brand that gives him a huge platform to continue to sell and spread the message that he wants to send to young people.
Exactly. You know, Nike sells tennis shoes. Nike sells dreams, and that's what the Nike does. And this was his dream. He stood by it because he thought it is an injustice. And you have to respect that. I got to say, with Nike's known for standing by their people. Michael Jordan with the gambling. Mm-hmm. Kobe Bryant with the assault.
Lance Armstrong. Joe Paterno.
I mean, they
Tiger Woods.
They stand by their people. So, and one thing is that with Nike, two-thirds of their customer base is under 35 years old. They're with the young. These are young people. These are the young. So they don't look at the message like, you know, he's disrespecting the flag. You know, they see something else. This is not just this is not about the flag. We said that all along.
Yes.
This is not about the flag. That just became all of a sudden it's about the flag.
I just want to deal with facts.
Okay.
Colin Kaepernick, when first questioned about this, said he would not respect the flag of a country that oppresses people.
But it's,
he made it about the flag.
But really, you know, it really is not. He might have said that, but it's really not about the flag. It's about the oppression that has went on here in the United States for many years. And so with Nike stepping up and stepping in, like I see all these people burn their tennis shoes. The NFL has a long relationship still with Nike for 10 years. The thing about Nike is they don't need the National Football League. We're a $120 billion company. We can stand on our own.
And I want to deal with that. We'll get to the NFL reaction. But I just want to deal with why I think this is a mistake for Nike. Because it feels good and it sounds good right now. It's the PC thing to do. I saw a television network make this same kind of mistake when they named Caitlyn Jenner the most courageous person of the year. And they planted a PC flag that has backfired. That was a turning point in the narrative about the worldwide leader in sports, and they've yet to recover from it. And so for Nike, I don't think this is going to work for Nike because, again, the left and these progressives that are so in love with Colin Kaepernick have long been criticizing Nike about their policies and the slave labor over in Asia. I just don't think these guys are just going to automatically hop on board as passionately because they've jumped behind Kaepernick. And then I think there's a whole other group that will be so outraged and irritated by this. Nike made billions of dollars and built its brand with Michael Jordan staying out of politics. It's very dangerous when you jump in here as a corporation.
I haven't been here one day. He already taking shots at my ex. I mean, look, you come up to the worldwide leader. Like, can I settle into this chair, person? Talk about my ex like that. We were good. We had a good relationship. 11 years strong. A lot of kids. Here's the thing. I don't understand why you want to draw the line on Kaepernick. Like, your ethical compass is now pointing at Kaepernick and saying that's the wrong direction. When we just said Jordan, Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, these are all situations where Nike said, we're going to sell our shoes by supporting our athletes. And I love a company that has the latitude of character to allow you to be a Tiger Woods who is not going to be political. And then you're going to have a guy like a LeBron James who is going to be political. They have that wide landscape, and I love the fact that they're supporting their athletes.
Well, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but again, my criticism of Nike has been gone on long before Colin Kaepernick in this moment. So in this moment, Kaepernick happens to be the deal. But me being critical of Nike, Michael Jordan, or whomever, Lance Armstrong, that's been going on for decades.
See, I also think about it beyond Colin Kaepernick. Look at what they recently have been doing with Serena Williams and the Williams sisters. They are going after edgy athletes because it's going to reach a faction of folks that are going to buy a lot of product. Like, that's as simple as it is. At the end of the day, Nike's in the business of making money, selling shoes, selling product. They know that young people, particularly young minorities, delve heavy in the shoe game. They know by rallying behind Colin Kaepernick, it uplifts the brand and it leaves the other brands chasing behind
it. I think it's going to work well over Twitter, but I just don't think Twitter's the real world. I want to move on to one last final topic on this. How do you think the NFL should feel? Their partners with Nike just signed a new 10-year agreement with Nike. The NFL has been trying to move on from the national anthem controversy, and here we are just 4 days before the kickoff of the NFL season, and they've just put Colin Kaepernick front and center. How do you think the NFL should feel?
The NFL can't oppose this. They can't resist this. I mean, quietly, behind closed doors, I'm sure some people are muttering,
some profanities and saying, oh, my, we just signed an 8-year deal with you, Nike, and that's an apparel deal, and now we have to bring politics into this. I understand that some people are going to be disgruntled, but here's the real. If you're the NFL, you say anything in resistance to this, you open up Pandora's box, because now you're starting to say, I want to control mindsets. I want to control personalities. I want to control characters. I want to control people. Because, like I said, their latitude on their roster is going to go from apolitical to too political to some people to not political enough for some people. And the NFL has to sit back and say, just like in our league and our 1,800 guys who are on the field, we're going to have some guys who are going to have commit indiscretions. We're going to have some guys who are just going to be the meat and potatoes, never do anything wrong. And we're going to have some guys who's going to help sell our brand to others. You have to respect that that's going to be the situation, and you got to respect what Nike's doing.
Well, even with the National Football League, when it comes to Colin Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick ranked as one of the top jersey sellers last year. Mm-hmm. It didn't prevent them from hawking his jersey with number 7 on it. So the league can say whatever, but at the end of the day, it comes down to money. And the league doesn't mind profiting off of Colin Kaepernick and the things that have come on around it.
And profit and policy, brother.
Nike. Look, the NFL is finally getting bullied by another big bully. That's what it comes down to. You can't bully me. You taking our money, and that's it, and just deal with it. And that's really what it is, because like Nike is in the business of selling tennis shoes. That's their business. And making sometimes normal people or athletes superstars. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what it is.
This comfort that 3 former NFL players seem to have with the NFL being bullied, that's what all... Eric, I know where you stand on this. You have some animosity.
I like to see the bully get bullied. Yeah, I like to just go ahead and slap him in the mouth.
I don't get it. I'm very protective of the NFL and pro football because it's an industry that has been marvelous for black men. And I don't get why there's so much people want to see the NFL knocked off its peg or bullied by somebody. I want to see the NFL do what's good for business because at the end of the day, that's the only value the NFL really can offer the players is money. All this stuff that we caught up in Twitter and, oh, it's going to be a platform to you to enact change. It's going to be a platform for you to enact feelings and to enact retweets and likes. But in terms of promoting real change, taking a knee and all this other and commercials isn't going to do it. That's the place to make money, and then you can take that money and support the causes you believe in. I'm just not comfortable with this. Everybody seems to want to see the NFL get bullied, including its former players.
I'm not on that soapbox saying I want to see the NFL get bullied, but as you want to protect them, and I want to protect a sport that has been great to me as well. However, that doesn't mean I'm going to be stagnant, and that also doesn't mean I'm going to be on the wrong side of history one day trying to suppress the rights and the voice of someone who's trying to speak for those who are underprivileged, who don't have that voice. Here's the thing that is forgotten about the NFL experience for a player in that locker room, that we have a tremendous gift, that we hone that gift, that we work on our craft to the point where we're professionals. But we understand the adversity, the hurdles, the obstacles that were in our way just to become that same professional. And we cannot forget about those who are treading water or those who are drowning from circumstances that we all birthed from. So I will never forget that experience, and that trumps my NFL experience when I have a platform like this.
I get his point, but we've all operated at an altitude where I think we should be able to identify what is real change and how do you really impact change? How do you really help the people that were in situations before you? And just my position is it's just not through gestures.
No, I agree. We all agree there. Policy and profits.
But again, I get it. The taking a knee is just a gesture. And so a lot, and what Nike's doing, just a slogan. And I don't even like the slogan in terms of believe in something and risk everything. Again, we can't even define what to believe in. This whole believe in something. Well, there's some people that believe in some real crazy things, and we've seen them take real crazy action. And so when I even hear this slogan, I hear it as a promotion of chaos and just do anything. And that's not good enough for us. And this is the problem I keep having with people is they try to recast my message. is the solutions to our problems are far more complicated than anything that's ever tweeted out. And it's far more complicated than just Twitter. And it's far more complicated than just some quarterback who lost his starting job that in an emotional rush took a knee and started something that he never saw growing into this. It can't just be just do something. It has to be, and again, Nike's promoting that. It's just do something, anything. And it has to be far more strategic and thought out than that. That's my disappointment with Nike and the entire thing. All right, welcome back. Marcellus Wiley is back with me. And we'll be here full time starting September 10th when SFY moves to its new time, 3 p.m. Eastern. All right, Marcellus, beautiful to have you here today just to give a little tease of what we're going to be doing every day on Speak for Yourself starting next week. Off to an awesome start, but I want to take everybody back just to establish your foundation, give people the backstory. You've been in this business a long time. What attracted me, or what maybe the first time I ever met you and I saw you perform in the media, I immediately told you, I don't know if you remember, I was like, dude, your upside is tremendous. Mm. You could be the man in this business. And it's because of the Ivy League education, the Compton growing up, the L.A. to Columbia story is amazing to me. Explain that to our viewers. Compton to Columbia, 180-pound running back to 270-pound NFL defensive end. Give us that story.
Yeah, grew up in Compton, raised there in South Central Los Angeles. It's really a story of my mother and my father being in a home and being aspirational. So imagine this. My mother's mother, my grandmother, moves from Watts to Compton for a better life. Amazing, right? In the 1950s, you hear this story of that's what she did to give us a front yard, a backyard, and a duplex. And I thought my grandmother was rich growing up. I had no real connection with wealth, the outside world beyond my borders, which was the freeway and the beach. And that's all I knew. Compton, South Central Los Angeles. My mother, unfortunately, lost three of her brothers violently because of gangs, the streets. Two murdered, one committed suicide. And she said she was going to make her promise that she raised her two kids away from that madness. So we moved to South Central LA thinking this is a better life. And it was for our educational purposes and better schooling. But it was always put in me from my family, especially my mother, that you had to do better. You had to do more. So I put a cape on at a young age. I quickly realized I had two talents. I was good in school. I actually loved to learn. And I was good in football and running track. I was good in sports. And I said, with this cape on, I'm going to fly us out the hood, and I'm going to make sure I bring my entire family on my back. And that's been the journey ever since.
What a running back in high school, and then a running back, I think, at Columbia initially.
Yeah.
How did that transition happen?
Yeah, I humbly say this. I was one of the top running backs at a Pop Warner level, like next level, like recruited big time, everything. And I got to high school, and my knees started to suffer. My knees started to have Osgood Slaughters, which is you're growing too fast, but you're uncoordinated, painful moments in my life. And I wasn't the same player, which was a blessing in disguise, because what happened is I got recruited on a major level, but not as big as anticipated. So I started to look at the game from outside perspective. I started to say, what if football doesn't work out? So when I'm getting recruited by big time schools, I was attracted to Columbia because it was my safety net in case these knees want to give out one more time. So I'm 180 pounds. My mother was 240 pounds. I'm in college, and my mom was bigger than me. It took me to my junior year to get bigger than my mom. And I'm one of those guys. My father always said, a marathon is 26.2 miles, but it's not after you take the first step. So all I did was take the next step. All I did was worked hard that day. All I did was make sure I did my job that day, and that started to snowball, and that turned into something.
I can remember as a columnist in Kansas City, following the Kansas City Chiefs around, I go to San Diego It's Derek Thomas versus Junior Seau. If my memory, but I know Junior Seau was there.
Oh, yeah. Special.
And then this number 75 for San Diego makes a play.
Getting double teamed too.
Yeah, getting double teamed makes a play. And they start playing a theme song about that dude. And I'm like, are they playing a song about this dude, Marcellus Wiley? I had never seen that. And then that took me down the path of like understanding, like, oh, this dude's a DJ and has a passion for hip hop. And I've always had this love-hate thing with music or with hip hop music.
Yeah.
Love it, but I can't stand the depravity of it. And so that was another reason why I wanted to work with you, because I know how genuine your passion is for hip hop and music.
Yeah, my first love was music. The way to discipline me growing up was to take away my tapes. My mom said, boy, if you don't stop, and I take those tapes away, and I had every single rap artist's album, every single one. Like, I didn't care if he was good, bad, ugly. I bought it because I was so into the culture. And what happened was I get to the NFL. When I finally get some money, got a signing bonus, I buy all DJ equipment, production equipment. And a couple of my friends from high school, we're just making songs and we're just going on, and I'm a DJ, and I've DJed for Outkast, Kanye West, Run DMC. I had a tremendous DJing career. And they made this song, my friends, that was Who's That Dude? And because I used to DJ the actual pregame warm-up music, they said, Marcellus, you got a song about you? Because whenever you make a play, which was a lot, we're gonna play your song, Who's That Dude? And it took fire. The crowd knew the lyrics. I would do the Buck the Boat dance, and it was a lot of love for those years.
I hate to ask you to be quick here, but I got to. Just on this topic. The other thing, man, I follow your social media, and I love the relationship between you and your son. I love the relationship between you and your daughter. You put out a tweet a couple months ago about make sure you go on dates with your daughter.
Yes.
I love the way you promote your family and how passionate you are about your family.
Yes. Like you said, in this world right now, all the issues going on, all the clickbait, all the talk, I just wanted to be something different. I know I could have a bigger social media following if I go on the other side of that fence, if I go over there and just play down to people's lower states. But I'm like, I want to be inspirational. I'm still aspirational. I want to promote family. I think it all starts there. People always ask me, man, how'd you go from the hood to the Ivy League and then become a football player and now you're on TV? And I simply say it starts with an identity. And my identity is my core family values. And I just say what Mark Twain told everyone, and I take as my core
motto. Is this some Wiley wisdom?
Wileyism. Wileyism. I'm telling you, this is what saved me and gave me the railroad to my life outside the neighborhood. Life is a competition between you and yourself. Remember that? Go after it every day and let it snowball.
So glad you're here. Looking forward to the conversations every day.
All right, to Philadelphia, where the NFL season kicks off tomorrow night with the Super Bowl champion Eagles hosting the Falcons. Nick Foles will get the start, but the Super Bowl MVP has looked pretty shaky this preseason. As always, Foles tried to put a positive spin on his struggles.
I went out there and played. You know, I made mistakes, I did good things, but all in all, you know, I felt like I grew as a player. And, you know, that's important, especially going through the preseason. I wasn't afraid to, you know, I wasn't trying to play it safe. I wanted to just play football. And with that, you're going to make mistakes sometimes. You know, obviously making mistakes isn't fun. It's, you know, it's the worst part of the game, but you're able to sit back, you're able to go watch film, you're able to deal with the emotions of throwing a pick, having a strip sack, doing all those different things, which aren't fun as a player, but I was able to deal with it in the preseason, which is awesome in a sense that I can learn from it then and move forward.
Nick Foles should have retired after the Super Bowl because in his mind, he did. He's done. He shook. He's lost confidence. I don't have any confidence in him, and neither should the Eagles.
Well, I think they should have confidence in him based on what he did last season. But here's the issue. When you win a Super Bowl, there is such a thing as the hangover. The book tours that he and Doug Peterson have been on, I've been on the Super Bowl team. When you come back, somehow you feel like you're the reason why you won the Super Bowl, and you don't work as much, you don't play as a team. So it takes you 5 or 6 weeks to get yourself back under regular season games because you think, I'm the reason we won.
I think they should be confident. I'm not as confident because I've seen Nick Foles in this position as a starting quarterback week one, day one, going into the NFL season, and he hasn't proven to do what he did last year, coming off the bench, being inserted in a role that was a lot less stressful and heavy, if you will. So I'm not as confident, but they have every reason to believe in him.
They played in the this is preseason he played. He didn't play great in the preseason, but you know what he did? He beat Tom Brady last year. Nobody thought he'd beat Tom Brady. You know, Nick Foles is what Nick Foles is. He's a backup quarterback. When Carson Wentz returns, he'll go back to that position. So for right now, you deal what you have. And he won the Super Bowl. I mean, it was last year, but still, he won it.
Yes.
Listen, I agree. I thought what the run he went on at the end of last year, terrific. But to me, I've seen the dude hang a mission accomplished sign over his career. He's done. Because if it wasn't, he would have went out and got him a starter's job and demanded starter's money somewhere. But he's just done. He doesn't want the responsibility of being a starter. That's why it was a nice little run, but he's going to go back to being the guy that shook, doesn't have a lot of confidence. I don't think they can really win with him as the starting quarterback moving forward. Because in his mind, what more can I do? I was Super Bowl MVP. I won a Super Bowl. I'm done.
But I think that's where he's most confident, knowing that it's not all on me. I am not the guy. I may be the guy for the first few weeks, but we have a guy that I'm just being inserted in for, and I don't have to bear this load myself. I think that's what gives him the confidence.
All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings and Brian Cox are back. We're joined now by the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to New England, where Tom Brady is gearing up for week one after a very un-Brady-like offseason full of distractions. But Brady just dropped the final episode of his Facebook series, Tom vs. Time, and the reigning MVP still insists that he plans to play until he's 45.
I would love to play 5 more years. I'd love to play 41, 42, 43, 44, 45. It'll be a challenge for me. I don't think it's gonna be easy. It's gonna be hard to do. I think it's going to be very hard to do. But I think I can do it.
And once you stop, you're done. And I think I'm not ready to say that I'm done because I don't feel like I am. I still like feel there's things to accomplish.
Yeah, it sounds to me, he sounds confident about making it to age 45. And that, to me, says that Bill Belichick is the guy that will be leaving Foxborough. Tom will be there after Bill Belichick is gone and Josh McDaniels is a head coach. But, yeah, I still think he wants to play and perhaps will play until he's 45.
No, not realistic. I was teammates with Dan Marino, and when Dan got old, one of the things he said is, I could throw the ball with anybody in this league, but it hurts when I get hit. As he gets older, those bones are going to start cracking, and he's going to be like, the hell with this, I'm out.
But Brian, Dan Marino was a guy that could barely jog around the field.
Tom's not much better.
Oh!
Tom's not much better.
He ain't that. He ain't.
Tom can't scramble. He's a pocket passer, just as Dan was.
Torn Achilles for Dan.
Torn knee.
A lot different work ethic as far as preparation going into the season.
I play with both of the guys. Neither one of them can move.
Right. No one's disputing that part.
So that means you're going to get hit.
But
and when you have to get up off the ground, that's what I'm saying the issue is. It's not that who's a better athlete. I'm not saying that. I'm saying Dan's issue was each time I got hit, it got harder to get up.
That's a hell of a statement. You play with Brady and Marino.
That is. That is. I think he still does want to play, but I think there are some pieces that pull on him more than just Giselle, those kids, the family, what we didn't see and what he is like present for and has been more there. When a kid is growing up, when your kids start to grow up,
you don't want to miss that.
You don't want to miss that. And they're starting to have more opinion, be more strongly voiced about things. That's going to pull on them a lot more. And I think walking out of that house when your son or your daughter saying, Daddy, you got to go again. That's going to weigh on him.
It gets hard.
I think that is what will pull him out before he gets to 40.
I'm with you, Greg. I have young kids just like you do. And, when they were 1 and 2 years old, it's not as exciting as it is now going to their sporting events, knowing their friends. But an added layer to this, guys, is when you look at the Jimmy Garoppolo situation, okay? Last year, Brady, very vociferous. I'm playing until I'm 45. I'm not going anywhere. They move Jimmy Garoppolo. He has now Kraft in his corner. So when you're watching this Facebook Live, Brady's just matter of fact about it. Oh, there's no pressure. I'll play till 43, 44, 45. Very casual, because he's not looking over his shoulder at the guy who's about to take his spot. So I definitely think Tom Brady will be playing till 45.
I don't think he was looking over his shoulder anyway. It continues to amaze me that people outside of the building in New England thinks that Kraft plays a part. Bill Parcells taught him early on his own, sit up there and have a couple drinks and eat cheese dogs, and I run the team. Anything that happens in New England goes through Bill Belichick. You know what? Bill Belichick doesn't even live in Boston during the offseason. He lives in Jupiter, and he remote controls everything. He runs everything in that building. I will continue to tell you guys that. I am of like-minded thought process that when Brady steps away, Belichick becomes the personnel guy and goes to Jupiter, and Josh McDaniel become head
coach. Brian, I'm going to push back. I think when you played there, coached under Belichick, I buy that Robert Kraft stayed out of things. But when there's a dispute between Brady and Belichick, he's the only guy that can arbitrate.
He does not get involved. Robert Kraft goes and asks Bill Belichick, what do you think? What do you want to do? And Bill explains it. This is what I'm doing. If Robert Kraft bothered Bill Belichick and there was an issue in that building where they couldn't get along, Bill Belichick would be the head coach of the New York Giants right now. Period.
As much as I love you and I think you have some great insight, it's hard for me to swallow that pill.
I'm just telling you, I was there.
Well, here's the – Brian, let me push back a little. The big difference is with everybody else, yes, Bill Belichick calls the shots. But with Tom Brady, the most popular athlete in New England, Kraft was not going to let him go. I had multiple writers from Boston on my radio show, and they talked about it and said, listen, Kraft was Brady's guy. He was not going to trade Tom Brady.
It was never a thought that he was going to trade Tom Brady. That's just like the Drew Bledsoe saga. Drew Bledsoe was his guy. That was like his son. And then Tom Brady appeared. To me, the big issue or the big things in this whole thing is Garoppolo was collateral damage. He had to go. He would have became a free agent. They would have got nothing for him. At the trading deadline, that's your last opportunity to dump him or you get zero for him. That's what people don't talk about and don't understand. It wasn't about, you know, this guy's going to take Brady's place. It's if we don't do something with this guy now when the season's over, he's a free agent. We get nothing for him. So they dumped him and got what they could get for him at the trade deadline. Simple.
They could have gotten more.
Way more.
At the trade deadline, who's going to trade him?
I'm very rarely speechless, but when somebody says, you know, I played with Marino and Brady, I gotta bow to your insight. It's much of the trouble being blind squirrel, you're right once a month. All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings here for Last Call. Let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones says he has tremendous respect for Nike, despite the shoe company's new ad campaign featuring Colin Kaepernick. All right, Greg, you buying this?
I am buying it because he has a relationship with Phil Knight. Like, Jerry's a businessman.
He's the biggest complainer about the national anthem controversy, and you really buy that he has no problem with Nike over this?
If you're putting money in Jerry Jones' pocket, he has no problem with you. He has a relationship with Nike. Nike is putting money in his pocket. I have no qualms. You do what you want to do. Just make sure that check is cut.
Gotcha. Not surprisingly, NBA superstar and Nike pitch man LeBron James defended the brand.
I stand for anybody that believes in change. I stand for anybody that believes in a positive attitude, in a positive manner. And I believe and I stand with Nike every day, all day. Love y'all.
The National Association of Police Organizations has called for a boycott of all Nike products. Everybody is picking a side on Colin Kaepernick. He is more controversial and polarizing today as a shadowy, non-speaking ghost than he was in a San Francisco 49ers uniform kneeling during the playing of our national anthem. If possible, I want to have a different discussion today. I don't want to debate Kaepernick or his stance. I'd like to discuss Nike's slogan, which I believe is more reprehensible and destructive than Kaepernick taking a knee during the anthem. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. That's the slogan that accompanies the close-up picture of Kaepernick's face. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything, just do it.
Is this the advice you would give your children? I'm talking to you, Mom and Dad America. Yes, you. Every parent who can hear my voice right now, is this the advice you would give your kids? Nike spokesman Gino Fizzonati stated that the new ad campaign is specifically targeted at 15 to 17-year-olds. Believe in something translates to believe in anything. You decide and be willing to sacrifice everything. It used to be the responsibility of parents and elders to pass along and instill morals, ethics, and beliefs in young people. Now we just let kids figure it out on their own with the help of the internet, social media, and multi-billion dollar corporations built on the backs of Asian slave labor. I believe this Nike campaign is also specifically targeted at black kids. That's why Kaepernick, Serena Williams, Odell Beckham Jr., LeBron James, and Shaquem Griffin will also be featured. All right, I'm joined now by three former NFL stars, Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, former Pro Bowlers Greg Jennings and Brian Cox. I just want to start with this simple question. Believe in something, sacrifice everything. Is that the advice you would give your kids?
Yes, absolutely. I stand with Nike on this decision. For me, it's as a little kid, I was always taught stand for something or fall for anything. This is equivalent to that. So to me, I think that when you talk about, if you look at this thing, you take a global brand like Nike, and they put such a controversial figure up, you know, and it's gonna make you lean one way or the other, and there's no straddling the fence on this. To me, I think it's a great deal to have him on because, again, I see the guy as 50 years from now being a Muhammad Ali type figure.
Believe in something and be willing to sacrifice everything for it. That's the, you would give that advice to your kids?
I wouldn't put it in those words if I were to share that with my kids, but absolutely, I agree with this. And when you think about why Nike did this, obviously it was okayed by Colin Kaepernick because of what they believe and he believes was taken away from him.
So why not say believe in equality, justice? Because, why can't we define it?
Because they clearly want it to be controversial, to your point, Brian. Like, they wanted people to know. Nike's slogan is just do it. They just did it. They literally defined with action their slogan, and they put it into play with this marquee decision to make Colin Kaepernick face and this brand and this deal big. That was their whole psyche behind it. So I'm with them. I think that it was greater than just Colin Kaepernick. It's about kids and us as a people really believing in something. It doesn't mean you're going to sacrifice everything every time, but you're going to have to give something up. There's going to be a consequence for whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, for a decision that you choose to make.
Kids believe in a lot of dumb things.
Well,
I'll
say this, is that I respect the flag. I think all of us respect the flag. But I love God. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that, would you make that sacrifice? People have made their sacrifice by losing their life because I love God, you know, and that's a sacrifice that if you're willing to make it, that is a true sacrifice.
Right.
And I really believe that in this case, he has sacrificed his career by the stance that he's taken. I do like what Nike's doing. They're standing with him. You may say that LeBron James is the pitch man, but you know, the NFL is the pitch man too, because they're taking Nike's money. If you don't like it, give all the money back. Give the money back that you took years ago, because that showed that I'm taking sides, but I'm taking sides with the dollar. And I really believe that this is the right thing to do in having Colin Kaepernick be in the face of this slogan for the 30 years.
Eric, you went to really my main point that I was a little bit afraid to go there, but since you already went there.
There we go.
Again, when you start to believe God and standing on principles that are God-based, I get. That's not what I'm seeing promoted here by Nike, and that's what concerns me, and that's what concerns me about young people, especially our young people. It's like,
No, no, go make it up on your own. Go figure it out on the internet. Go figure it out with your video games. Let Nike tell you what to believe in, or let anybody tell you what to believe in. We don't want the responsibility of defining for you and instilling the morals and ethics and character and the things that we believe, we were taught to believe in by our elders. We've just sacrificed it all for the young people. And let Nike, social media, Twitter, let them all give you your beliefs. And that's why I think we have so much chaos with young people across the board, not just black people, just across the board. Everybody's being left to figure it out on their own and just do it. Feels good, just do it. This to me is more problematic than Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem. The promotion of this message of just do anything, if it feels good or it's crazy, we're gonna get to it. We can go right now. The commercial was out, and it's, you know, are your dreams crazy enough? Make them crazier. This is the messaging being pumped to young people, and I just think it's a mistake.
Well, I'm gonna take a little bit of a different stance, and I'll say this just, I think a little bit you're being hypocritical, because when you say this billion-dollar industry that is Nike, mm-hmm. you take the NFL and you always say they got a right to tell the players to stand. So which one is it? Do you want Nike not to be able to say this is who we want to be our brand ambassador, or do you want the NFL to be able to say?
I'm not complaining
about. But I'm just saying is you can't have it both ways.
I'm not complaining about Nike's choice of brand ambassadors. I'm complaining about the message. Now, as it relates to the NFL, everybody has a job where they have to respect the rules of their bosses. And again, when you sign up for a television show, again, I'm capable of talking about history and this and that, but Rupert Murdoch, Eric Shanks, they want me to talk about sports on this show. I just can't do anything just because I want to on my job.
Well, Nike's job, they chose him as a brand ambassador. Why should that be an issue for anybody? That's who they chose. They have a right to choose who they want to be the ambassador. And so I'm saying, you know, we look at this thing, we make it a double-edged sword, because in the NFL we say, you got to do what the owners say. But then when Nike comes out and says, we want this guy to represent us and be our brand, then we turn it on them like, why would you have this guy to come? We can't have it both ways.
Not the debate I'm having, but I want to stay right there because you've transitioned to the other layer of this conversation I want to get to. Here's an excerpt from the actual commercial that Nike's done with Kaepernick.
If you're a girl from Compton, don't just become a tennis player. Become the greatest athlete ever. Yeah, that's more like it. Don't become the best basketball player on the planet. Be bigger than basketball. Believe in something. Even if it means sacrificing everything.
One, I don't think Kaepernick sacrificed much, but I don't even want to have that discussion right now. My point, back to these guys, and just, I'm not saying this to disparage, but I just want it for context. Both of you all have had a relationship with Nike.
Mm-hmm.
I Greg and Brian, I think you've had a relationship with Adidas.
Yeah, well, I got a carrot cake.
Yeah. I'm just uncomfortable, and again, you may call me a hypocrite, and maybe I am being hypocritical. Nike, these guys are just puppets for Nike, and they're allowing Nike to use them to promote a message that I don't think is best for our young people.
You can call it puppets, but I disagree. It's a two-way relationship. Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, Serena Williams, all these great athletes are also standing on Nike's platform as well. Nike is using their platform, and you better believe they're using Nike's platform to promote their brand, their message, all of that. When you look at this and it says believe in something, or even if it means sacrifices everything, it's left to the viewers, the consumers' own interpretation.
I know.
Whatever you desire, whatever you desire, if you strongly believe in it enough, be willing to deal with whatever comes with that. It's not a matter of, is this my, do I have to agree with it? Is Nike doing the right thing? They're doing what, like you said, what they want to do to make sure that they understand, or they're sending the message to their, not only the general public, but their athletes, that we're supporting you. You are with us, we have been with you, and we are in full support of you and what you stand for.
And it shows how the athletes they have supported when they stood behind Tiger Woods. They stood behind Kobe Bryant. I mean, they stand.
Joe Paterno.
Joe Paterno.
Yes.
Joe Paterno.
Well, like I said athletes. And you know what I like this, I think I love this the most is because finally, someone is bullying the national football as players. As players, we can respect that.
I shouldn't have had you two together.
Because they're getting what they deserve. They're like, hey.
Whole life transformed by football, and y'all love to see these two love to see the NFL beat up.
I love my sport. We love each other as players.
Right.
We don't fall for the false narrative that they put out. We are family. We're family.
Exactly.
We're family.
Right. Exactly.
We're not their family because the way they treat the players, that's why finally someone is big enough to say, hey, we're doing it like this. But
how did you two get on?
I'm coming to your side a little bit, Jason, on this issue. Football is being attacked, and so we must understand that. But here's the thing for me. As a former player, if you would have told me as a young kid growing up in the inner city with no way out, couldn't play basketball, couldn't rap, wasn't the smartest person in the world, but I could play football. You gave me a great opportunity. But all I'm saying is, why hide the concussion issues? Why hide the injury issues? No, all I'm saying is, tell me that, okay, it's a chance you're going to get hurt and let me make that decision.
You didn't know that.
Well, they hid the statistics.
You didn't know.
No. I knew it as I was grown in 7-8 years of my career, but they hid statistics to say that your life is short in 10 years. I would have played anyway. I was a poor kid with no chance out, to your point of like how many black athletes has made millionaires. So I'm grateful for it. I just wish the owners would be straighter and more straightforward and not try to push a false narrative.
And so,
and again, I'd be behind the NFL like nothing you've ever
like
seen.
Like baseball and basketball.
I'm not asking to forgive and forget. I don't want to sound that Pollyannish or that weak or whatever, but I do want to just... We are 2 days before the start of the NFL season, and Nike and Colin Kaepernick have come in and hijacked the conversation and created more polarization and more animus around the game of football. And this, again, where I just say, are these athletes, do they really understand how they're being used and manipulated? Now, at this point, Kaepernick doesn't care because he hates the NFL and he's suing. I'm just talking about the rest of the football players, the current working football players. Can they not understand the things that are going on are not in the best long-term interest of a game where we have made a lot of money?
See, and I disagree. I don't think that they're being manipulated. Most of these guys are continuing to educate themselves on the social issues that are going on every single day around us all. And so when I look at Colin Kaepernick and I look at what he's been able to do, he has educated himself. He has surrounded himself with people who are continuing to educate him. So when I look at guys who are current playing in the NFL, NFL is not going to stay with them forever. Like, once you are out, you are out. If the NFL was so supportive, which I love, I'm with you, I love the NFL for what it provided for me and what it continues to provide. 5 years after you're done, what are they doing?
Okay, but again, this is an issue I talk about amongst my friends, former college football players, guys, that my best friends all the time. It can't be once I've left the institution, I don't care how it operates or what it does after I'm gone. It can't just be that. That there has to be some concern about, am I leaving the institution that's been good to me in a better position? Am I helping the institution that helped me grow and develop so that the next Greg Jennings, Brian Cox, Eric Dickerson has a better experience? It's got to be about some of that. It can't just be I'm done and so screw the NFL.
What you're saying is kind of right, but in a sense, the guys that have made the National Football League, the Jim Browns, the Gale Sayers, you know, the guys
Eric Dickersons.
The guys even before me, you know, they take those guys and they push you to the side. You're done.
They push Jim Brown to the side.
Yes. If you talk to Jim, yes, they push you to the side. They almost want you to go away and die. Like, don't come back. That's why the problem comes in. We don't, like it's like the founders would say Apple. When you're a founder, you're always taken care of. Right. You're one of the guys that started to make this company great. We have made the National Football League great. And they made us great, too, along. But you know what? Bring us along with the ride. Don't you be here, and we're down, down here.
Eric, the Los Angeles Rams have a great relationship with you.
Now.
After you got the coach fired.
I could go back.
Eric, let me give you one more point. And you, everybody.
I want to hit on something.
Football League is one of the reasons why y'all sitting here right now collecting a check.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
I don't disagree with that.
But we're not football. We're not getting paid by the NFL. We're getting paid by Fox.
Fox's relationship with the NFL is why you're here. It's all connected.
Let me touch on one thing.
Please, quickly, we gotta go.
Nike has started a conversation with they're bringing white people to the table because now you see white people burning up shoes and stuff that they purchased because they're mad over Colin Kaepernick. It pushes the conversation further where we're getting away from the protests and we're starting to talk about real issues.
Burning shoes.
I'm saying they burn the shoes because they're that upset. Like I say, you can't straddle the fist on this topic. You got to be on one side or the other. But the conversation burns on.
We don't need
burns
more
on.
Polarization.
The conversation is burning more on. The conversation is burning on now.
On Thursday night, football will make its long-anticipated return to living rooms across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. For the season opener, DraftKings is hosting a fantasy football contest that is $10 to enter and has a $1 million top prize. But for a limited time only, if you sign up with the code SFYS today, DraftKings will give you a free entry with your first deposit. Single Game Showdown is the newest way to play. All you have to do is draft six players from Thursday's game, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Put your football knowledge to work, and you could win $1 million while watching the season opener. The top prize is $1 million, but you don't have to come in first to be a winner. There are $2.5 million in total prizes, which means thousands of winners. So download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code SFYS to sign up and make your first deposit. When you do, DraftKings will give you a free shot at $1 million this Thursday. That's code SFYS at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings, Eric Dickerson, and Brian Cox are back. Let's move to Seattle, where Earl Thomas has ended his holdout and will report to Seahawks camp. Despite not getting the new contract or trade out of town he was seeking. Meanwhile, Le'Veon Bell's holdout continues despite a guarantee from teammate Marquise Pouncey that Bell would show up at camp today. Gentlemen, I hate to say this with Eric Dickerson here, the king of the holdout.
What are you talking about? Le'Veon Bell,
you're Le'Veon Bell's idol. He got it all. Le'Veon's making the right move here. I think Earl Thomas has made a mistake by ending this holdout. The only way to get the money is to hold out and or force a trade. I think Le'Veon's going to play this to the bust, and I think it's the right move.
I disagree, and here's why I disagree. You've held out, and you've lessened your chances of getting injured during the preseason. Now the money's on the line. Your teammates need you. The organization's counting on you, and you don't show up. To me, here's what Earl Thomas tweeted out that's different from Le'Veon Bell, why I respect Earl Thomas a little bit. He said, I've never let my teammates, my city of fans down as long as I've lived, and I don't plan on starting this weekend. So that means he's showing up for his team, his organization, his city. Le'Veon Bell is in the same situation. He's probably the best back in the league. Don't dispute that. But now the money's on the line. We need you to show up and get with it. He's holding out. He's lessening the risk of injury. There's nothing else to hold out for. You know Pittsburgh's not signing you at the end of the year. You got to go get that money.
I disagree with you, Jason. And my disagreement is a little different. I think I respect what Le'Veon Bell is doing. And I think both of them for holding out, understandably so, you want to get a new deal. You feel like you're deserving of that. But now when you have worked so hard, as Earl Thomas stated in his tweet, your biggest attribute, your showcase is this platform. So in this league, sometimes you can easily be forgotten because guys stepping into a role and performing well. I'm not saying that they're going to forget him, but it's almost like he will have to reprove. Can you still do what you did that we know that you're capable of doing, but we need to see it now? And for Earl Thomas, I think he's being smart about it, saying, you know what, I held out. I made my point. I will continue to make my point. But now that I'm in here, I want to let it be clearly noted, I'm in here because of my guys, my teammate. It's not, yeah, I'm going to tell you even.
They ain't paying the bill.
It ain't got nothing to do with the organization. It ain't got to do with the fans. It has everything to do with his relationship with the guys.
Any teammates ever pay your bills?
I wish they would have. You know what? I kind of agree with all of you. One thing is that when I think of Earl Thomas, pretty much that Seahawks team is gone. What he knew, you know, right. Bennett is gone, Sherman is gone, Chandler's gone. So, you know, like you said, he went in for his teammates and also possibly, I'll play my deal out and I'll get out of here. You know, I'll be 30 years old, but I still think he can play. And I think he wants to go back to Texas, play in Dallas. You know, he made a pitch to Garrett.
Right.
You know, he's from Texas. I can finish out my career in Dallas. With Le'Veon Bell wants to be played like a quarterback and a receiver and a running back. I love Le'Veon. That doesn't make sense to me. That's like me saying, you know, I'm a great blocker all the time, so I only played like a great blocker and a runner.
And a runner.
And a runner.
And we know you wasn't blocking.
And I knew I wasn't blocking nobody.
Many holdouts as you had.
Can I finish?
You gonna question Le'Veon Bell.
Go ahead. Le'Veon has to do what's best for Le'Veon. And I always believe that. You never count a guy's money. You do what's best for you. And I always believe that. I think that Le'Veon is doing what he thinks. Will he be back at the Steelers next year?
No.
Probably not.
No.
So, and he's taking, right now, he's taking the hits off his body. Look, I'm gonna stay healthy. I'm going to play, do what I have to do.
That's the point, Brian.
And that's a great point.
He can get 300 carries and 80, 90 receptions and be less valuable at the end of the season.
That's a great point. But if I'm another team, am I willing to pay him? Because he seems like, to me, for the second year in a row, he's the guy that if you pay a lot of money, he's going to ease up. He's going to take his time. He's going to do it the way he wants to do it. And secondly, if I'm a teammate on Pittsburgh, I'm saying, man, we got the money on the table now. It's time to go to work. Where are you? If you can't show up, now how can I trust you when things get hard?
See, no, I don't think the teammates are saying.
Yeah.
As a teammate, you're supportive of your guy because you understand we all want to get paid. I want you to get paid. You're going to want me to get paid.
But you also know that when the real game starts, it's like, okay, you made your point. Let's go to work.
Mm-hmm. You may feel like that, but you will never say that to your teammate because you know why he's.
Ben say we can win with Connor.
Yeah, that's what Ben is going to project
it, right.
All of that because he is the leader of that team. He knows that I need Le'Veon Bell. I want him to be here, but I got to induce promote some type of life and belief in these young guys too.
Okay, now let's dissect this for a second. Okay, so when we talk Pittsburgh, we talk the big three. We talk Ben, we talk Antonio Brown, and we talk Le'Veon. They paid Ben and they paid Brown. Why won't they pay Le'Veon? It's some sort of defect there that they don't want to pay this guy.
Suspensions in the off-field issues.
It's some defects.
But Brian, I just think, and I say this really respectfully, this is why coaches loved you, man, because you were all about the team.
Right.
A lot of guys.
What about me?
No.
What about me?
The money, then the team.
You can respect both.
Yeah. I can respect both. All I wanted was $1 million.
Did you share the cake after you ran for 2,000 yards?
Man, please. Adidas gave me that carrot cake. I'm still mad about it.
The NFL season kicks off in a few hours with the Eagles taking on the Falcons. For my money, this is the best day of the year. I get to plop down on my couch, pour some Casa Dragones over ice, order teriyaki wings from Wingspot, barbecue chicken pizza from Fresh Brothers, a hickory brisket and bacon cheeseburger from BJ's, a spicy tuna bowl from Sweet Fin Poke, a salad from Chop Stop, and watch football. Tonight is as close as I can get to heaven without Tamron Hall's involvement. Unfortunately, there are forces at work trying to ruin my pigskin paradise.
Pig out paradise.
Pipe down, Brian. It's a pigskin paradise. Rather than fixate on football, the game's enemies want me to worry about CTE, criminal justice reform, domestic violence, and other serious matters. I'm sorry, but that's not what I want to do when I'm watching football. I want to see gladiators compete at the highest level. This desire does not make me inhumane, immature, or evil. It makes me human. I cannot weigh the world's problems 24 hours a day, and neither can you. You have jobs to work, bills to pay, spouses to please, children to parent, parents to worry about. You have responsibilities. Football is our escape. People who care little of football don't want you to escape. There are a handful of professional football players who want to use the game to elevate themselves under the pretense that they're elevating others. Don't let them win. Don't let them stop you from enjoying the combat, the competition, and the masculinity of football. If someone gets hit hard tonight, pray they recover quickly, but don't think for a moment the game should be restricted or eliminated. Truck drivers risk their short and long-term health every day for far less financial reward than football players. How much time have you spent moralizing about the ethics of driving a truck? I'm passionate about the issue of criminal justice and prison reform. I've explored those issues as a journalist. My family has lived through the deadly pain of police misconduct. But pregame gestures do not fix those problems, and neither do well-intentioned but ill-informed posturing by athletes and sports media personalities. The health of the game of football serves us all, but most especially black men, better than using it as a platform to address divisive issues Americans can't agree on. Are you ready for some football? I am, and don't let anyone ruin it. All right, joining me now, three former football players, three former very great football players, Greg Jennings, a former Pro Bowl wide receiver, Brian Cox, a former Pro Bowl linebacker, TJ Houshmandzadeh, former Pro Bowl wide receiver. I'm sorry, guys, when the Eagles and Falcons kick off, I want to see some tackling, some hitting. I want to hear some talking about tackling and hitting and blocking. I don't want to think about the world's problems and serious issues. Enough is enough. It's time to focus on football.
I absolutely agree with that, man. I'm glad this offseason's over. We could talk about tackling, who's winning, who's going to be the surprise team of the league this year, who's going to be the team that everybody thinks is going to contend that turns out to be a clunker.
I'm not going to feel any shame about just wanting to focus on football, Greg. I'm just over it. I'm frustrated to a point that everybody wants me to watch this game and think about a bunch of stuff that I think about when I'm not watching football. I don't need it while I'm watching football tonight. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. This was the first time I read your essay, and I was like, wow. Outside of all the delicious entrees that you will have, I'm like, Jason, make a good point. No, when everybody needs a scapegoat. Like, football is to be that. Just football. I get it. Everybody has something that they're trying to promote. But for these 3 hours, 3.5 hours, I'm with you. I want to see great plays being made. I want to see football at its finest. And what better than to start with the previous two NFC Super Bowl appearance teams, one being the Super Bowl champions, Eagles, and 2 years ago, Atlanta Falcons, who kind of blew their chance.
We're going to get that anyway, regardless if anything happens prior to the game, which it's a possibility with Malcolm Jenkins being on Eagles. We're going to get that regardless as far as great football. What the players choose to do prior to the game, whether they do it or they don't do it, it's not going to affect the quality of the game.
Not going to affect the quality of the
game.
At all. But what I'm trying to do, I hope Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are listening to me right now. Talk football tonight. Don't let anybody bait you into talking about anything else other than football. I get that when the game kicks off, we're going to focus on football. But I just don't like all these other issues hovering over the game of football and forcing the broadcasters and everybody else to talk about it. I just think it's inappropriate. There's a better time and place. I just don't think it's effective.
You know what? It's almost like after a while when you get the fans that get really drunk and they want to streak on the field or they want to run on it, they stop showing it. So if the announcers choose to not talk about certain things, that's them. If they're smart enough and they want to keep the focus on the game, they want to keep the focus on football, they can do that. It's just up to them to do that. Regardless of what's going on prior to the game, if they want the focus to be football, it's up to them to do that.
Are we acting like we don't play a role in that in the seats that we sit in right now?
We're talking about it.
We talk about everything sometimes other than actual football.
The games haven't been here.
You're right.
The game. Now we got games. Now we have things that we can talk about beyond that. And look, let's go ahead and address the elephant in the room, because tonight Nike's gonna air their commercial with Colin Kaepernick. Let's move to that, to a guy trying to upstage the NFL, Colin Kaepernick, who made waves this week with a new commercial from Nike. While the ad has continued to cement Kaepernick's brand as a Twitter folk hero, not everyone was so impressed, including the Redskins' Josh Norman, who took the former quarterback to task for abandoning his own fight, saying, quote, "When he took a knee, everybody was in shock and everything. But when the bullets start flying, I was trying to figure out where he was at, and he was ducking when you're in the line of fire and the guys that are over here are trying to have a conversation to move stuff forward. He didn't want to have that conversation." I love these comments from Josh Norman. We've had Colin Kaepernick, I think inappropriately, in a little protective bubble. No one can say anything about Colin Kaepernick. If you criticize him, oh my God, let's throw you out of the human race, let's throw you out of the black race. Martin Luther King didn't live in that bubble. He was criticized by Malcolm X. Malcolm X was criticized by Martin Luther King. People that really did sacrifice everything took some heat along the way and were questioned and prodded. Colin Kaepernick has lived in a protective bubble of not reality. And I'm so glad Josh Norman has the stomach and the courage to take it on and be honest about Kaepernick.
I don't disagree with what Josh Norman said, but to me, Colin Kaepernick's stance was his own personal stance. It wasn't for him to communicate what he was doing. That was his way of saying, I'm going to stand for police brutality and things that happen to black and brown people. So, you know, when Josh says he didn't communicate it to me, he didn't have to communicate it. That was his personal thing. The coalition came behind that.
He can set the league on fire, put all the other players in the middle of a controversy, but he doesn't have to say a word.
He jumped on a hand grenade, man.
Who did?
Kaepernick.
No, he threw the hand grenade,
No,
Ryan.
He jumped on
he
it.
He might have threw it, but he jumped on
he
it
jumped
as well.
On it. So it was his own
personal No. What Josh Norman is saying is Kaepernick threw the grenade and then ran off into obscurity and hiding, and all the rest of us have jumped on the hand grenade.
No, they dodging the bullets. He jumped on the hand grenade. He took the biggest possible risk of his life, losing everything, as the commercial says. He's been out of work, but yet we're still talking about him. That man will be an icon in the future. Oh, I know you don't want to hear it, but
it's not true.
Muhammad Ali, during the time doing he was avoiding
quit
the war,
comparing him to Muhammad
all,
Ali.
All I'm saying is, him to all Muhammad I'm saying Ali. Is Muhammad,
Muhammad
Ali.
Was he afraid of a microphone? Was he afraid of getting an interview? Was he afraid of confronting any of his critics?
No.
He didn't hide.
But was
and
he
let
popular when he was doing it? He's the greatest now. Everybody wants to say he's the greatest. But during the time when he said,
stand,
I'm not standing out.
He took a real stand and backed
Kaepernick.
It up. He hasn't backed it up, Brian. He's running here. Ain't nothing scared about you. I don't understand how you can support and back up a guy who's scared of his own shadow.
That man gave up his future
in the NFL to make sure that other people that look like him
would have a chance.
Number one, when he did this, he never thought in a million years I'm losing my football career.
Right.
He never thought that it would be over. And was this thought out? Absolutely not. It wasn't thought out. But you're not thinking of, you don't have a plan when you think, oh, I'm out. If he knew my career is over, he attacks this differently. He goes about this in a different way. We're all African-American men up here. And we're all up here because of football. But he saw something. He wanted to make a point. He had a big platform being the NFL. And it was not thought out. And that's okay, because you don't think the repercussions are going to be this bad. Now, if he could go back and do it again, his plan of attack would be different. And what Brian, he did jump on a hand grenade. Everybody else just followed suit. They piggybacked on what he was doing, because nobody had thought of doing this before Kaepernick. All they did was follow suit. They follow suit. That's it.
I'm going to go back to Josh Norman's comments.
Go ahead.
Because I was initially shocked, but then I thought, this is Josh Norman. This is calculated. This is a
as you say, clickbait.
The timing of it, the start of the season, he's getting into his mode of being on an island. He plays defensive back. And this is just my opinion, just like that was Josh Norman's opinion. I think this is him utilizing this to where now he understands people are going to have some backlash. He's going to get some backlash about this because he's in most people's eyes he's going to be seen as attacking Colin Kaepernick.
Which but he was.
I think this is what he wants because he's going to isolate himself in his own little space, get on that defensive island that he has to be on for 17 straight weeks, and put his blinders on, and it will allow him to lock in. We'll see great football from Josh Norman.
He's going to make a lot of new fans as well. But here's what I think Josh Norman was doing. You guys got to remember, the Players Coalition that Malcolm Jenkins started, which Josh Norman is one of the 12 guys that's a part of that, they just put out a long note on the Players Tribune about their goals starting the season and where they stand right now on all the issues. And they, in that letter, they showed Kaepernick some love. But I think Josh Norman raised his hand and said, I'm going to step away from this note we're putting out and we're all signing our name to, and I'm going to tell the truth about what we really believe about Kaepernick. But all of us are going to sign our names to it. Josh Norman is going to be the guy that steps out and says it, because this is what I believe they believe. If you go read their document, and again, I think a lot of it is wishful thinking and a bit naive, but they have a plan, a strategy, a goal. They put some thought into what they're doing. And they're saying, this guy didn't. He won't even work with us. He won't even communicate with us. He's not involved at this point. He's out building his brand. And again, if you go look at the note the Players Coalition put out versus the commercial Be Something and Sacrifice Everything or Believe in Something that has nothing to do with what Kaepernick initially allegedly was protesting, all that Nike commercial is building the Kaepernick brand of greatness and putting him on the same pedestal as LeBron and Serena and a bunch of people that have accomplished a lot more than him. I love what Josh Norman is doing here. He's speaking the truth.
Jason, would there be a Players Coalition if it wasn't for Kaepernick?
No.
Would they get the $90 million from the owners to fight social injustice in the community?
No.
Must be 1201.
So all this happened because
must be
Kaepernick.
1201.
All of it happened because
once
of Kaepernick.
Once a day, you're right, at 1201, and you just made some good point. That is a very good point. But just because his non-thought-out actions led to something.
Change.
He didn't intend. He led to. We'll see if there's some change. We'll see. Look, we'll
$90 million is a change because the NFL don't hand out money.
$90 million. Who knows? They could take it to Vegas and blow it. Who knows? Who knows if the money's going to affect real change? I've seen a lot of charities blow money now.
But
I have to give you credit. He did spark something in Malcolm Jenkins, Josh Norman, and all Torrey Smith and all these other guys that they're following through with. I think they have a right to be disappointed that Kaepernick's not coming along with him.
Okay, and I'm going to defend Kaepernick with this. He hasn't played in the NFL in 2 years.
He
Why should he show up?
With that, he has a lawsuit against the NFL. He can't get on that coalition and he's suing the NFL. Like that's why he's not involved in that.
And he hasn't played ball in 2 years. Why would he be out? Nobody wants to hear from him at this point.
What do you mean no one wants to hear from him? You got him on a pedestal like he's Gandhi.
Well, he's going to be up there with Muhammad Ali one day.
See, I think what Kaepernick did, it was thought out. It just wasn't as thought out as the coalition because they had time to then look and see what went wrong.
All the backlash that he received.
Exactly. And now they, let's do it this way. Let's make sure we do it with a different approach. And so that's what we're seeing. But with Colin Kaepernick not being, he wasn't invited to the first sit down, the first meeting.
He was invited.
No, he was not.
No.
No, he was not. He was invited afterwards.
Because you can't get a hold of, you know what? We got three new inductees to the Kaepernick Hall of Fame. We got three new
You don't even say the man's name
to the
right. Kaepernick. Wow. It ain't Kaepernick.
No, there's Kaepernicks. You are Kaepernick. He's Kaepernick. You cape up for Kaepernick. That's why I call you a Kaepernick.
And I'm going to stand with that brother. I'm standing with that brother.
First Hall of Fame Kaepernick.
I'm standing
Brian
with
Cox.
That brother.
All right, welcome back. Greg Jennings, Brian Cox, and TJ Houshmandzadeh. Cox just told an incredible story about how much money he threw away with the Jets. All right, but let's move to Philadelphia, where the NFL season kicks off tonight with the Eagles hosting the Falcons. The Super Bowl champs have been enjoying a victory lap this offseason, with Coach Doug Peterson and Nick Foles both writing books, Lane Johnson continuing to trash talk the Patriots, and Malcolm Jenkins launching a silent protest during OTAs. Listen, I think the Philadelphia Eagles are full of themselves. I think they're going to get a big batch of humble pie tonight. I don't think they're going to be repeating. I don't think they're ready for the start of the season. They've been on book tours and celebration tours and arrogance tours. I don't think they're ready for the start of the season.
Neither do I. And you look at the preseason, they've struggled offensively. The one thing that they are still capable of is playing really good defense. And so I think the defense will keep them in it early. You can't really go by the numbers of the preseason because no real game plans are being put into place. Now you start real football and you start cutting down the playbook, not calling all the plays, putting the things in that Nick Foles is comfortable with. I think the offense will do a good enough job. I think they beat Atlanta tonight. I don't see them as competing for a Super Bowl this year. I do think that the hangover will get them.
Every team is going to be ready to play. You go through all
every
season.
Every team is going to be ready. They're playing for the Bengals, TJ.
And they're going to be ready. They're going to win a division this year, too. They're going to win a division. Remember, I told you that. Every team, when you go through an offseason and you go through training camp, everybody feels like they got a chance. They're going to be ready to play now. Are they going to win tonight? I don't believe they're going to win tonight. Their defense is going to keep them in every game because they're going to be that good up front. Offensively, Alshon Jeffrey won't be playing today. That's going to hurt them. You don't put too much stock in the preseason. There's not much game planning, even though in game three you will put a little game planning in. The Falcons just have an impressive roster. They have an impressive roster of players on that team to where if they stay healthy, they got a chance to beat anybody, and they got a chance to win the Super Bowl. It's not no fault of the Eagles. It's just, number one, they've been taught. That's what you do. When you win and you have fun and you've been under, you're going to talk. It's a new generation. You're going to put your chest out. That's just what you do. And that's not going to have an effect on today's game.
No, the Eagles are focused on defending their title. And this whole idea of Super Bowl hangover, like,
it's
shut.
Real.
No.
It's real.
Stop.
It's
look,
real, bro.
Okay, let me explain. You have a Super Bowl?
Yep. As a player, and I competed in one as a coach.
And
Atlanta.
You felt like you had a Super Bowl hangover the next year?
I felt like during the offseason, everybody sugaring you up, paying for your meals, old ladies kissing
but
you.
What's that got to do with your
work? What's that got to do with your drive?
The hunger. Yes, let me.
You don't have the drive.
Okay. Yeah, you do. So we won the Super Bowl, 2010-11. Next year was a lockout. Drew Brees and everybody getting together with their quarterbacks and their receivers, and they're going. All we heard was Aaron Rodgers isn't getting together with none of his receivers. All we did that year was go 15-1. You call that a Super Bowl hangover? No. These guys will be ready to play.
The lockout saved you.
No. These guys will be ready to play because they're still the hunters, but they have to find a way to even more so be a hunter because everybody's hunting them. They have a target on their back.
I get there's a stat. Since 2003, no one has repeated as Super Bowl champion. That's a long time.
But a lot of the time when you win a Super Bowl, you have a lot of players that leave because they go get paid.
And so you lose
players. They haven't lost many players.
Other guys that stay there, though, somehow feel like they're the reason that they won.
Dude, like, you bring in Michael Bennett. Like, Michael Bennett's a dog up front. Like, their defensive line is going to be very impressive.
They are, but Brandon Graham is hurt. The thing that I say about Philadelphia tonight, if you look at the last two times they played Atlanta, one, I was on the Atlanta coaching staff, and I think they beat us 24-15 or something. And then last year in the playoffs, the game was 15-10. Schwartz knows how to play against Atlanta's offense. They don't score many points. So the defense to keep them in it. It'll just be interesting to see tonight if Nick Foles can lead their offense to 20 points, first of 20 wins.
All right, to the Falcons, who were one Julio Jones stumble away from stopping the Eagles in the divisional round last season. But now Matt Ryan has even more familiarity with offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian, and I think they're the biggest threat to unseat the Eagles in the NFC. I am high on the Atlanta Falcons. They've got the right defensive line coach in there, finally, after years of having to recover from Brian Cox coaching the defensive line. Seriously, I just think Julio Jones is going to have a hell of a season. He's paid. He's happy. I think that's good. Matt Ryan's familiarity with Steve Sarkisian is – I love the Falcons this year.
No. And I think they'll be good and they'll contend. But the NFC South is one of the toughest divisions in all of football. You look at the Saints made the playoffs last year. Carolina was in the Super Bowl 3 years ago. Tampa Bay was a team that everybody thought last year would win the division, and their defense went through so many injuries that they could not compete. Tampa is a team that I'm looking at as a surprise team to compete and come out of the NFC South.
Jameis Winston can't even play.
It don't matter. He got three games. When he comes back, they'll be 1-2, and they're going to run. I'm telling you, their offense is phenomenal, and the defense won't play as bad as they played last year. That's the team that I'm looking at coming out of the South.
Man, what
I'm a Green Bay Packer.
what they do to you in Atlanta?
Man. I think Atlanta's going to be there, and I just said whoever comes out of the South. It's a really good
division.
You know
he got fired in Atlanta.
But I'm not mad, though.
I just want Greg to know.
My son plays for Carolina.
If you didn't know.
And I didn't say Carolina. I didn't pull Carolina out of my head. I said Tampa Bay.
Carolina didn't fire you.
I like the Falcons. I like the Falcons a lot. I don't like them more than I like the Vikings. And that's a whole nother topic, but I like the Falcons. I was down at their practice 2 weeks ago, and it's different. And again, you've been in that culture, but when you get to see them play, and my whole outlook on Matt Ryan and his approach to the game, you know, him not showing that fiery side of him, that leadership that we want him to show, he has that.
He has it.
He has that. I like the way Dan Quinn approaches these guys. He builds trust with his players to make sure. Julio Jones didn't see a snap.
I would just hit you on one spot here. Who's going to replace Taylor Gabriel? That was the one guy that can stretch the field.
Okay,
Muhammad Sanu is a really good player, but he's a possession
receiver.
He's underneath.
Look at the Falcons skill guys. You got Julio Jones. You got Muhammad Sanu. You got Ridley from Alabama.
Yeah, he's
a
slot receiver.
Tevin. The running back, you got Devontae Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
They have arguably the best set of skilled players in the league.
Did they have them last year?
Yeah.
What happened?
New offensive coordinator. Couldn't get a chance.
Matt Ryan's going to have to form that cohesiveness with Sarkisian to where they get on a roll. When he calls a play, you know what defense he's expecting. So you already have an idea of what you should do with the ball.
Who's the speed? You lost Taylor Gabriel. That was the guy that took the top off.
Who's the speed? Julio Jones is the speed.
No, I'm saying you need somebody opposite Julio.
Calvin Ridley can
Julio
run.
Julio gets taken. He takes three defenders.
And
Julio is the best in the game. Everybody talk about Antonio Brown. This guy takes two and three guys.
Calvin Ridley
now, the problem
can
is,
run.
Ridley is a slot receiver.
No,
he's
not.
Gonna start up. He going to start ahead of Muhammad Sanu?
When they go three
wide. Is he going to start?
No.
So then
when
how
they go three
gonna...
wide, Sanu's going to go on the slot, and Ridley's going to go to the outside. That's what's going to happen.
Is he as good as Taylor Gabriel?
He's better.
Man, you've been smoking something. You've been smoking hookah.
Okay.
You've been smoking hookah.
I ain't never smoked nothing a day in my life, and I ain't going to start. So to answer the best team right now in the NFC?
Green Bay Packers.
TJ, I don't know if I told you this earlier, but Atlanta fired Brian Cox. So
Green Bay Packers.
The Green Bay Packers.
Or the L.A. Rams.
Green Bay Packers.
The L.A. Rams.
L.A. going to have to go to Lambeau Field in the playoffs.
All right, welcome back, Greg Jennings, and former Atlanta Falcons defensive line coach, now unemployed, Brian Cox. And we're joined now by the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Denver, where the Broncos released former first-round pick Paxton Lynch this week, making him the latest quarterback of the John Elway era that hasn't worked out. In a new Sports Illustrated piece, Elway admits evaluating quarterbacks is tough, while former teammate Terrell Davis offers an explanation for Elway's struggle, saying, quote, "There aren't a lot of John Elways out there. We look at Michael Jordan and say he should be able to find and identify the best basketball players in the world, but it doesn't work that way. The problem is it's hard for John to see a quarterback and the kid can't do what he can do because he thinks everybody should be able to do it." Respectfully, Terrell Davis, I just don't buy this. Everybody has a problem finding a quarterback, particularly when you're not regularly drafting at the top of the draft like the Broncos aren't. I think it's a struggle for everybody. I don't think he's got some special quirk because he's a former great player. Look, they found Peyton Manning with a neck injury, and he had some success, and they ended up, the defense dragged him to a Super Bowl. But I don't have any problem with Elway striking out and missing on quarterbacks. I don't think there's anything unique about it.
Neither do I. And the second thing is, it's hard because in college you get all these spread offenses, and now you're trying to look at who fits, and Paxton Lynch was prolific when he was at Memphis, and now all of a sudden you bring him in to Denver and you put him in a pro-style offense, and it's a non-fit. I mean, he can't see it the same. So one of the things for any team is to find guys that can transition from that spread offense, run first kind of mentality, throw short passes, RPOs, to somebody that can take the ball from under center, drop back and throw it. I mean, that's a hard deal. There are only about 10 good quarterbacks in the whole league. So somebody's without a good quarterback.
I agree with Terrell Davis in what he's saying. When you're looking for something that you have been, sometimes you're hoping that you can develop it. You're hoping that they can turn into something special at quarterback because you, in your mind, that's the way you work and you're wired. So I can see where there can be some type of, man, I hit and miss. What I do commend John Elway for is getting rid of Paxton Lynch. Because sometimes when they don't work and admitting to it, sometimes you try to hold on to something that is just, it's not for you. It's not going to work. To your point, that spread offense and quarterbacks making the transition to under center, it's a completely different quarterbacking and footwork and timing. Being under center and footwork versus spread offense and not really having to utilize footwork, completely different timing. It's a growing curve.
I love the excuses for John Elway. I mean, geez, I mean, he's just such a great quarterback. It's so difficult for him to find someone on his level. No excuses, Greg, come on. Even if you want to look beyond just the quarterback, which he struggled to identify, his 2017 draft, they just dropped four of the guys that he drafted. We can admit John Elway has struggled as a GM. We can admit that. That's fine. And he got lucky, I would say, Whitlock, with Peyton Manning. He got lucky. He got the star quarterback in Peyton Manning. But, you know, this whole excuse of, oh, well, he hasn't drafted at the top of the draft. Okay, well, Russell Wilson wasn't at the top of the draft. Dak Prescott wasn't. We could go on down the list. Kirk Cousins was a middle-round draft pick. I know Elway was a great quarterback, and the fact of the matter is he can't draft quarterbacks.
Would you say Kirk Cousins is the end-all, be-all? I mean, when you look at Russell Wilson and you look at Dak, they were lucky to get those guys. Nobody ever thought those guys were going to be what they are. That's why they went in the fourth and the third round, respectively. So Kirk Cousins is not a guy that everybody's, you know, like, oh, this guy can win a Super Bowl. Washington let him go for a reason.
He just got $90 million
that's
guaranteed.
That's the market, though. You can look at the 32 teams in the NFL and you can say there are really only 10 to 12 really good quarterbacks and the rest of them are just guys.
My point that I think sometimes gets overlooked about the quarterback or just anybody, it's the spread offense and all that, but I just don't think you ever know how any young person is going to react when you hand them millions of dollars. You don't know how that's going to change them. And then getting dropped into an NFL locker room is a unique experience. Some guys just aren't ready for that. I can remember a guy I grew up with, Jeff George. His first center was a guy named Ray Donaldson. Mm-hmm. And Ray Donaldson was a very difficult person. A very difficult person to work with. And instead of wrapping his arms around a rookie quarterback, he kind of tortured him and played pranks on him and did all kinds of things that muddied up the situation in Indianapolis. So I just think it's a crapshoot for anybody at quarterback when they're drafting. You drop those kids into an NFL locker room, and some of them get swallowed up.
This was a Denver team that just won the Super Bowl, had a good offensive line, had good receivers. He couldn't beat out Trevor Siemian in back-to-back training camps. This is a massive whiff, guys.
I understand that, but you're saying that we're defending Elway, but in the same article, John Lynch makes the statement that I don't even scout safeties because of that very reason. Because I'm looking for me.
All right, welcome back. Brian Cox is here for Last Call. Let's move to the Rams, where Executive Vice President Kevin Dimoff just revealed that the team made a serious effort to trade for Khalil Mack. The Rams have already shelled out tens of millions this offseason. Brian, how could the Rams possibly afford Khalil Mack?
Because their owner doesn't care about giving out the cash out of his pocket. So if you make it guaranteed money, you can sign more highly touted players.
I've said this for years. People in Kansas City will remember I used to champion the no salary cap limit soldiers, is what I used to call Kansas City Chiefs, and wanted to pressure Lamar Hunt into spending as much money in signing bonuses because that's how you stretch out the cap. Obviously, the Rams aren't afraid to spend that cash.
All right, Coach, everyone had questions about who was going to start at quarterback when this game started. What answers did you have about your quarterbacks after watching both of them play tonight?
Well, I still like both guys. I think both guys are good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. So quit asking.
All right, welcome back. Marcellus is here for last call. Let's move to Nick Saban, who ended up calling ESPN reporter Maria Taylor to apologize for that display after Alabama's win over Louisville. Marcellus, did Saban need to apologize here?
Absolutely not. If you look at this situation, it just takes me back to 2013. Amazing how the world turns, but people don't evolve. Richard Sherman, Aaron Andrews, in the emotional context right after a game, when we're in a different space, you know this, definitely. We're in a different place, and you come up to me and you want to know what really goes through my mind when I'm in the Lions' Den before I had time to take it and unpack. You know what happens? You're going to get moments like this. Brutal honesty that a lot of people are going to have this shock reaction. But from a former player perspective, from just a citizen watching the game, respect that the guy just told you the brutal truth.
Yeah, I'm a huge Maria Taylor fan. Number one fan. Thought her question was great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a real problem with Saban being gruff. That's what football coaches are, particularly in that moment. No reason to apologize.
No.
All right, to golf, put this in here, Greg, just for you. Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson have been named captain's picks for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, which had Phil feeling very patriotic on Twitter. Greg, do you think these picks are about golf or TV ratings?
I think they're about both, but more about golf. I'm sorry, TV ratings.
Oh, okay.
When it comes, as far as golf, Phil has not played well at all as of late. And Tiger Woods, any opponent that he's played with, he's elevated their level of play, and he is to some degree folded. So I would question, why would you pair Tiger with some of these up and coming guys that are
the Ryder Cup's never been Tiger Woods' thing.
It's never been his thing.
And look, I think Furyk in a tough position, because if he doesn't take Tiger, and maybe even if he doesn't take Phil, there's some backlash, fan backlash, those guys being upset. Tiger wants to play in the Ryder Cup, but to me, this is about TV and TV ratings and what will make the best television show. And if these two guys weren't in it, I think ratings would be hurt.
I think I agree with that. And when you look at Phil, I think he's better suited, honestly, because last Ryder Cup, he matched up with Sergio Garcia. Sergio isn't a long ball hitter, so he doesn't pose a huge threat to Phil. I mean, he can play well against guys like that.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow.